Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, and also on Periscope at TotalTutor. And I'm telling you, some exciting things happening in the anniversary week, a month, I guess, of celebration as we are waiting on a celebrity guest to call in, we hope, on the line. So I'm just continuing to wait to see who our guest will be, and we're ready to go. So I don't want to surprise you guys. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net. But I know for sure now that we have our guest on the line, so I want to welcome the program. I wanted to see if do we have our guest on the line right now?
I'm here, buddy.
On the line?
I'm here.
I'm excited to welcome the program, former soprano star and star of the CBS TV Blue Blood star, Steve Sciarippa. Steve, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Good, Neil. How are you, pal? How's everything, all right?
I'm doing fantastic, man, and I know you have some cool projects coming up right now that you want to talk about, so tell us about a couple of those projects that are going on.
Well, I have a sauce out. It's all organic, gluten-free, non-GMO. It's called Uncle Steve's, and we have marinara sauce, tomato basil, and arrabbiata. We went into business about a year and a half ago, and we're in over 2,200 stores. We're across the country. We are everywhere, ShopRite, Stop and Shop, Whole Foods, all across the country, Albertsons, and we have great gift baskets for sale. You could go to UncleStevesNY.com. And call 1-844-NY-SAUCE, and that's what I've been doing with that. The sauce is great. It's all organic. It's gluten-free. I also started doing Blue Bloods. I've done three so far. I'm scheduled to do some more. Terrific show. I finally get to play a good guy. Very happy about that. Great actors, great writing, and that's about it. I did a show called Benders, waiting to see if it got picked up. It's on IFC. It was about a club hockey team. So, you know, I've stayed busy.
Staying busy. So what's making you now promoting this product and stuff? Have you seen specifically enough from the success of The Sopranos and stuff that you see you want to endorse products that you really think are create products you really think are something that's going to help benefit people, and especially when you're talking about organic food and stuff. So tell more about that.
I'm not just promoting this. I mean, this is my company, it's my mother's recipe. My mother passed away a few years ago. A buddy of mine had an idea to kind of honor her. So we made it healthier. We made it organic and non-GMO. I'm not a jar sauce kind of guy, but this sauce is terrific. It's really the only sauce I've ever tasted, to be honest, you know. If you didn't know it came out of a jar, there's no way you would know. So we did make it healthier. Everyone eats organic. You know, you have to these days. You know, there's nothing bad. It's on the front of the label. Yeah. All the stuff that's in there is right on the front of the label so you could see it. No preservatives, nothing hidden. And that's it. You know, we're happy to, you know, like I said, we're in 43 states, 2,200 stores, ShopRite, Stop and Shop, UncleStevesNY.com. We have these great gift baskets for the holidays and all kinds of goodies in there.
And what you like, probably, Steve, about creating this product and having your own business is basically the understanding of finding products that are going to definitely work. And when you think about specifically organic and non-GMO and thinking about the specifics that people that are going to not have the time to, you know, cook a home-cooked meal.
Well, these are different, you know, it's different times. You know, Neil, years ago, the mom was home most of the time, and she was cooking. She would make sauce on Sunday, make sauce during the week. Listen, most families, both parents are working. They don't have time. They're working. The kids are busy doing their thing, soccer and softball and whatever sports they're playing. It's just a different demographic. To put something healthy on the table, and that everyone likes, it just makes it easy. You get a jar of sauce, you know, a pound of pasta, you heat it up. I mean, you got a meal, an inexpensive, healthy meal in a half an hour. So there's a lot more of that going on. And not just for pasta. You make eggplant parm and chicken parm and chili and soup and all kinds of stuff, you know. So it is a different time. You know, the mothers used to cook and cook, bake pies during the week and do all stuff. You know, people are scrambling to make a living.
They are scrambling to make a living, Steve, and I think that's the thing that you see is that you want to have stuff, and you see how the, especially Whole Foods are growing in the different places, and to have something that, you know, it's something that moms wish or dads wish they could have the time to cook, and to have that sauce. And tell me, what has been the feedback since you've had, since you've started the sauce?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, you could see just how we're growing. Like I said, we're in business a year and a half. We're in 2,200 stores. We're in some of the best stores in the country. We're also in mom-and-pop stores, you know. And so I think that speaks for itself, that we grew so fast, and we're doing well. I mean, listen, there was a lot of startup costs, but we're doing well. The company's growing literally every day. And it's a good product that I really feel passionate about, as you can tell, because it's that good. Yeah, I'm sure.
Exactly.
I don't know if they sent you yours yet, but you'll be getting it.
I know. I know my wife will be excited because she's Italian, and so she's going to be pumped up, especially, you know, when she has to do some of those jars, sauce jars, too, and they're like, oh, my gosh, and I don't want to do that. You know, she's used to making it from scratch, but she has to work, and it's
a lot of work, man, a lot of work. You know, you could make, for what the jar sauce cost, organic, you couldn't make it for as cheap as we do, you know?
Exactly. And is it cool, again, especially, I guess, from starting this business and getting to talk to the different people, or how many people loved you on The Sopranos and having those conversations as an entrepreneur? I'm sure that makes you passionate as well, having a product.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Listen, people know me from the show, you know, but, you know, it's, that works twofold, you know. Sometimes they go, oh, it's another celebrity with sauce, you know, because there's been so many. Listen, Frank Sinatra had a sauce. Tommy Lasorda had a sauce. All kinds of people. Frank Sinatra's sauce failed terribly years ago. You know, it works too for, oh, another celebrity with sauce. But I go out, I spread the word, I go to stores, we do tastings, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm not just a spokesman. I own 50% of the company. I am very much a part of it. I believe in the product. And I think if you order it, the people will see. You just go to UncleStevesNY.com and, or call 1-844-NY-SAUCE, and you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And that's great, so you said you got the chance to shoot Blue Bloods, and you really enjoyed that opportunity.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, I did 3 episodes of that. I hope to stick around longer. I'm supposed to do a few more. It's a terrific show, and I'm happy to be there. And, you know, it's a great cast. I'm just happy to be a very small part of it, you know?
Well, yeah, getting the opportunity to work and stuff and see that after the experience with Sopranos and staying a working actor, that's such an important part. But now you seeing how important being an entrepreneur is as well, to juggle both of those things is a challenge, right? Especially owning a business.
Well, you know, listen, you know, the acting comes first. I have a partner who handles a lot of the source stuff. But, you know, I do voiceover stuff. I have a big commercial coming out. I do all kinds of stuff, you know. I've hosted things. I'm producing a new show that's coming up. So, you know, a lot of different things. I like staying busy. I like doing a bunch of different stuff.
What would you say was your greatest part of being on that Sopranos show? Like, what would you say greatest moment of the show?
You know, it was a once-in-a-lifetime deal. You got a bunch of great actors and writers and David Chase, and he assembled a bunch of terrific people that were very much in sync. You know, we were together for 10 years. We've, you know, went through a lot of stuff, all of us together, and we've stayed friends. So I think it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You'd be on a lot of shows, but they're not, you know, sometimes you work with people and then you go your separate ways. But this was a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and it would be a part of it forever. I think they'll be showing it 50 years from now, you know.
That's great. Again, the best place, again, to find information on your sauce and everything like that, and I'm going to have to tweet you out and Facebook you and let you know once we try the sauce for sure.
All right, please do, my friend, and you have a Merry Christmas.
All right, take care again. The website one more time.
Thank
you. Okay, take care.
What?
All right, that was Steve Sciarippa from The Sopranos. Take care, guys, and we will be live later today. Take care. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And, you know, it just continues to be a really, really, really fun anniversary week. Awesome guests. I don't know, in the last 3 weeks, I've interviewed more people, more celebrities, than some of the years that I've been on radio, so we're really growing. We have a lot of fun guests coming up. You got to go to my website to find out more information. Well, our guest this afternoon is somebody that everyone loves, especially you're a fan of Judge Judy. So I'm excited to welcome the program Officer Byrd of the number one syndicated television show, Judge Judy. Officer Byrd, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's been a crazy week and crazy leading up to Christmas and the holidays, and then you know everything slows down and we come up with our New Year's resolutions. Don't you agree, officer, that you know what happens is you basically we go
you basically
like crazy.
You basically lie to yourself. you lie to yourself about what you're going to do for the next year.
Exactly. And are we going to do it? Do we really, after the crazy hustle and bustle that we don't have any time to do anything, do we really think we're going to accomplish more next year? It's always good, I guess, to have that hope, but that's when, especially you and I that are entertainers and entrepreneurs and different things, we write down in our books, okay, what do we want to accomplish in 2016? Maybe we'll get to one of them, but we at least got to have hope, right?
That's it. But, you know, the thing about it is I have a friend who always says, you know, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. So, you know, you have to at least put something out there. You have to, you know, if you're going to try to go somewhere, you got to at least try to create a map to get there, you know.
Even though God gives us a different map completely.
they say if you want to make God laugh, tell him what you want to do.
As you heard me say, I said in the last couple of weeks I've interviewed about 6 celebrities a week when I'm averaging maybe 2 for some years or even 1, and now where I'm at today and I'm getting like hit up by everybody. It's just really cool and it's nice to be liked. And I can't wait to hear your story, because to think about getting an opportunity like you did to be on the Judge Judy show and be so well known. Bring us back to your childhood. And did you ever think you'd be an entertainer in some way like that, especially on a television show?
Okay, I would say no, but the actual answer is that when I was a kid, I loved TV. I watched TV all the time. I did impersonations of the people that I saw on TV. I liked shows like F Troop and The Monkees, and I grew up on The Odd Couple and the Honeymooners. The Honeymooners were like my favorite. That was almost like a religious ritual for us to watch The Honeymooners on WPIX in New York every night, and we would just laugh because then TV shows were wholesome and they were family oriented and everybody could watch. I loved the Carol Burnett show, and I liked watching Ed Sullivan and watching the entertainers come on there, and I always wanted to be one of them. You know, I went to the movies and, I got to tell you now, I knew that somewhere in my destiny, somewhere in my future, there was entertainment somewhere. Because I couldn't do much of anything else, so you know, I wasn't the greatest athlete. I wasn't the greatest brain in the world. I was a pretty smart kid, but entertaining I could always do, you know. Always could sing, always could dance, always could do impersonations, and
right.
Love stand-up comedy, you know. So it was in my future. was in my future. Didn't know I was going to get there via Judge Judy. Now that part I did not know. You know, that's God's amazing sense of humor right there. You know,
exactly. When you're writing down your plans, when you were going into your career, it didn't say I'm going to be the bailiff on Judge Judy and become more beloved than what's his name from the show Night Court.
Bull.
I don't know if he's fast on or not. I'm 6'10", by the way, Officer Burt. So when I look at, I was such a huge fan of Bull that when I'm growing up, I was just such a huge fan of his. So, but let's take us back. See, I interview lots of celebrity athletes, actors, but I always like to kind of take back growing up. Again, when we talk about your career, they're going to say, well, we just never thought this is what Officer Burt did, and you have some other things you're promoting as well. But tell me specifically, you say you loved all that entertainment, but your career didn't start out like that, especially. Tell us how that developed and how you had the career mindset growing up, because that's important, because some people don't, and you see where they end up.
Right. No, the career mindset, believe it or not, was I wanted to be a lawyer. I was a big advocate of the civil rights movement. I was young, but I grew up in the civil rights era, and Thurgood Marshall was one of my heroes, and so I wanted to be a lawyer. Fight for the cause, and you know, for the downtrodden people, and all that, and I really wanted to do that. And if you ask me, when I was in fourth, fifth, sixth grade, seventh, eighth, ninth through high school, wanted to be a lawyer. Went to junior college, and then went to John Jay College of Criminal Justice to further that track towards being a lawyer, Just got my criminal justice degree, and I guess decided that, you know, being a lawyer took a little too much time and a little too much out of me. But I became a court officer, and I worked in Brooklyn Family Court for a year, and then I got transferred over to Manhattan Family Court, which is where I met Judge Judy. And again, at the time, I'm not thinking TV, I'm not thinking, you know, my mother always told me, you know, yeah, right, get a real job. Never mind all that daydreaming, you know, get a job in the post office or something like that, you know. In 1990, I moved out to California to be with my family out here in California. And 5 years later, I had left law enforcement. I was working as a high school counselor. And I'm sitting in my office one day reading the paper on my break, and I happened to read I would read Liz Smith's gossip column all the time, just because it reminded me of New York. She would talk about things about New York, about the entertainment in New York. And at the bottom of this particular day, I'm reading this article, this fateful day, I see the name Judy Shineland. And that they're developing a TV show for her, and that she's written this book called Don't Pee on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's Judge Shineland. I used to work with her in Manhattan Family Court. And so I decide to write a letter to congratulate her, and I faxed the letter off, and it's a congratulatory letter, and, you know, God bless you. You know, it couldn't happen to a nicer person, and, you know, you deserve it. And P.S., if you ever need a bailiff, I still look good in uniform, you know. And so what started out as my little joke at the end of this letter, 3 weeks later she calls me up and she says, hey, we need a, she said, I appreciate the letter, and we do need a bailiff, and you're already out in California. And she says, as I remember, you're kind of crazy. And I said, yeah, I'm still kind of crazy. And she said, well, if you're crazy enough to try this with me, I'll recommend you for the job. And that was sight unseen. You know, she hadn't seen me in 5 years, man. I could have weighed 400 pounds at that point. But she took the chance. She did tell me to send a picture in, though. She wasn't a total fool. She did tell me to send a picture in. And that's how it all came to be. That's how, you know, it went from, you know, I mean, well, let's put it this way. In God's humor, I stayed in the legal system. You know?
Right, exactly.
And I work with lawyers and judges, you know, I did all of that. But eventually my true love, entertainment and entertaining, came to the fore. And so, you know, and so now, you know, I don't want to disillusion people, but I am officially an actor. I'm no longer in law enforcement, haven't been for quite some time, and haven't been for the whole almost 20 years that we've been doing Judge Judy. You know, so I do commercials. I've done short films. I've done I've actually been in feature length films. Most of all, I do voiceovers, and I love doing voiceovers. I do about 100 different voices, and you know, anybody who knows me knows that, you know, I am crazy when it comes to impersonations. I do spot on impersonations, so you know, so it's, you know, it's an opportunity for me to do what I do. Within the realm of getting a steady paycheck for the last 20 years. I'm a working actor. Oxymoron.
See, that's such a great story and a very interesting story. So let's take us back to working with Judge Judy at the beginning. We all know the character that she is. Was she that character when you were working in the court, in the family court system in Brooklyn?
Brother, in the words of Flip Wilson, what you see is what you get, honey. That is exactly, she is exactly what you see and has always been. And that's one of the things I've always enjoyed about her and respected about her, is her integrity is like, you know, irreproachable, man. It is, she is what she is, you know, and she doesn't apologize for it. So she was just like that on the bench. You know, I remember several times, especially during trials, we worked in Manhattan Family Court. So, you know, caseworkers would get up there and sort of give the same testimony over and over again. You know, it's like the instructions that you get on Google Maps, you know, where it tells you how to get out of where you live. You know, it's like, wait a minute, I know how to get out of where I live. I just wouldn't know how to get to this place, you know. And so that's the way the testimony of the caseworkers would be. You know, it'd be some general stuff. And then you get to the meat and potatoes. And she could not stand to sit there and listen to, you know, counsel for, you know, for the plaintiff or whatever, continue to ask the same questions. So she would jump in and they would go, I just like my objection noted, John. And she's like, so noted. So anyway, let's get to this. And she would like run the caseworker or whoever the witnesses, just run them through their paces to get to what she needed, you know. And because, you know, she thought the wheels of justice grinded very slowly, and they did, you know, except when she was on the bench. Then they moved up. They sped up pretty quick, you know.
So you had times where you had to keep a straight face, not before filming, but when you worked with her in the early 80s at the Brooklyn Family Court, where when you walked home, you thought about some of the comments she made, and you're probably laughing like crazy and say, well, I wish I could be laughing right now in the courtroom for the kind of entertainment that she brought.
Well, yeah, you know, most definitely. And the other thing was that I used to call her the Joan Rivers of the judicial world, man, because she was just funny. She had these, you know, I mean, a lot of these sayings that you hear her say on Judge Judy are sayings that she had, you know, that she said on the bench for years, you know, and to give you an idea of what her sense of humor is like, her greatest memory of me back then was that she came in one day from lunch to find me on the bench with her robe on and her glasses, doing what she calls a scathingly accurate impersonation of her. And I'm just going full tilt, and everybody's laughing in the courtroom. And all of a sudden, everybody becomes silent, and their eyes shift to my left. And I was like, you're in the doorway, aren't you, Judge? That's okay. You don't have to fire me. I quit. I got up and I put her robe on her and put her glasses on her, and she just looked at me, but her deadpan was so funny, you know. She's like Jack Benny or somebody, and you know, and it was just a remarkable moment. But she always remembers that moment, seeing this big black man sitting on the bench doing an impersonation of her, and she always says, and he was doing it well, you know. So that's the kind of sense of humor. That's the kind of humor we're dealing with. That's the kind of person we're dealing with, even when she was on the bench, you know. Stern, no nonsense, but very fair, very smart, extremely smart. You know, like she said, they didn't keep her there because she was beautiful. They kept her there because she was smart, you know. And she was just, you know, it was just great working with her, you know. And you know, it's funny because sometimes she would call me in, you know, like sort of to intimidate
right.
somebody. You know, if you had some guy that wasn't paying his child support, and you know, or you had somebody who came in, you know, through corrections, and you know, they had a trial date. You know, the guy might have been doing, you know, double murder or, you know, double life, and he ain't got nothing to lose by trying something in the courtroom. So she would call me in, and, you know, just to make sure that, you know. So that's where I learned to have that stern face that I usually display on TV.
You know, now, we'll talk about that. What I was thinking about Officer Byrd is, how tall is Judge Judy and how tall are you?
Okay, I'm 6'4".
Okay.
Judge Judy is about 5'2".
Okay. Yeah. My wife's 5 foot, so I'm 6'10", so we can imagine the you two standing next to each other for sure, and that how that was so perfect for the show, for sure. So once you were told you had this dream of just writing this note and saying, "Oh yeah, I could be part of that," like I always mentioned in different things like that, I said, "If you're going to come back," I was a former professional wrestler, Officer Byrd, and I said, you know, I sometimes interview wrestlers, said, "Hey, you're going to make a big run with WWE, call me, I'll be your bodyguard, just call me, I'll come back." And it's a joke, like, oh yeah, but you never know when you say these things. So once you got the call, you showed up, they said, "You're perfect for this." Did you think this show was going to take off and be as big as it was?
Oh, no. Most people will tell you that in Hollywood, you know, it's a lot of guesswork. You know, you're looking at if it lasts 5 years, you're going, wow, you know, and if it lasts 10 years, you're going, that's fantastic. If it lasts 15, 20 years, you're going, this, you know, this is crazy. Nobody ever saw this, you know. And so, no, man, I didn't imagine at all that, you know, I'm matter of fact, when I first got the job, I took a leave of absence from the high school that I was working at. And because I was like, nah, man, you know, this doesn't happen. This is going to go, you know, a year or something like that. And then they're going to be like, hey, you know, thanks, folks. You know, it was a great run. And, you know, it was a great year. Take care. That was my prediction of it, sort of, you know, shows how much I know. And so the second year we were taping, I went to take another leave of absence from the school I was working at, and I was told, no, you have to make up your mind what you want to do because, you know, we can't have you here part-time or half the year, you know. And I loved working at the high school. Let me say that. That's the other career that I was involved with that I loved. You know, I've always loved working with kids, and I still do in some capacity. They're always part of my life. But I had to actually make up my mind. So my wife and I were buying a house at the time, and it was advised, you know, don't make any serious changes, don't make any drastic changes in your employment. So I remember I worked at the high school right up until the closing of my house, and after that it was like, okay, I have to leave, and I put in my notice and. Officially then I was an actor, and I was depending on the Judge Judy salary to, you know, to sustain me. And God bless, it sustained me for the past 19 and a half years. So
that's it. And that's awesome. So once you got on television, how did your life change? Meaning being recognized, going back to try to go back and be a counselor. And the kids,
I remember when I first went back to the school, the kids, well, during the time that I was on leave of absence the first time, well, we taped, I think, from July of 1996 to February of 1996, and then I came back to the school for the rest of the semester, and you know, by then the show had premiered. It had taken off like gangbusters. The ratings were off the hook for a syndicated show. And, you know, kids were coming in and asking for my autograph. Their parents were coming in asking me, you know, to sign stuff and to take pictures with, you know, and this was pre cell phone days. So, you know, so their parents were actually bringing actual cameras, you know, disposable cameras. Can I get a picture with you? And, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, so it was surreal, you know, and then at that point I was making more money than my boss, who was the principal. So I don't think she appreciated that too much either, you know. But let me say this, America, I've always maintained that teachers deserve far more money than entertainers, and I will swear yes to that anywhere, you know. They deserve more money than athletes and anybody else, man, because they actually shape our children for the future.
Right.
So anyway, so. I'll get off my soapbox on that one, but yeah.
Well, that's so true. It's just we have to make education, even though it's a big business. The people who make money in education, Officer Bird, are the ones that are the big publishing companies. They're the ones mm-hmm. that are the big prep companies, all these different big entities. They're the ones that make the money off of our tax dollars, and we're not paying teachers. And that's the sad fact, and it's not fair. Because education is a commodity. It's as powerful as entertainment, yet the people getting paid are not the ones that are doing their jobs every day. It's somebody else.
That's true. You know, so, So, other than that, man, it's being recognized. It's, you know, it's crazy things happening to you, like standing behind somebody in a local supermarket and having the clerk say, "Hey, Bird, how you doing?" I go, "Hey, how you?" You know, and as soon as I say, "Hey, how are you?" the guy in front of me, white dude standing in front of me, turns around and goes, "Bird?" And I go, "Yeah." You know, I'm thinking, well, where does he know me from? And the funny part is he goes, "No, I just recognized your voice." I'm like, I just said two words, you know, but, you know, when people watch you every day, man, you know. And then the other funny part is having people who think they know you, but think they know you from someplace else. You know, hey, didn't you used to be married to my sister? Wasn't you my cousin's parole officer? You know, it's like, no.
Yeah, aren't you a professional athlete? That too,
you know. And then I go, no, I go, and then I just go, "Judge Judy." And as soon as I go, "Judge Judy," I go, Bird, oh, man, I watch you all the time, man. Hey, my father loves you. Can I take a picture of you? Can you? You know, so now I do little videos for people. I go, "Hey, you going to see your father this weekend?" "Yeah, I'm going to go and see him this weekend. He's in a nursing home or whatever." "Okay, well, let me send him a little message, and I will record a message to them, you know." A lot of times I'll change the voice in the middle of it or something like that, and they're like, "Oh, he's going to love this, man, because he thinks you don't say anything," you know. Like, well, that's true. On the show, I don't say anything, but everywhere else, I'm a pretty talkative fella.
Yeah, well, us big guys have to be talkative or we'll be interesting. You know, we are interesting because we're bigger than everyone else. We have to be entertaining as well because people are jealous of us. So we have to find some way to break the ice because they wish they could be as tall as we are. That's the truth. That's
well,
the way
they're also scared of us. They're hoping that we're going to smile, you know, and that we're going to be, gregarious, you know.
We're hoping that we're giant teddy bears, and that's the way we have to show up through our comedy and all that. And let's kind of – I want to say, what was one of the wildest tapings you ever had on the Judge Judy show in 18 years? What one, like, a story that you said, "I can't believe this. I never thought this would happen in a courtroom on television"?
Well, there have been some weird cases, but you know, I remember one case where this was early on, where the judge, she was into her stuff, man, and she was just like lambasting these people, and he was kind of challenged, you know. And so the sister had her significant other there, and this guy was huge. I mean, huge, right? So you and I don't know how wide you are, but you say you're pretty tall. I'm coming in 6'4", about 230, 235.
Okay.
This guy had to be, I mean, like, you know, 260, 270, all muscle, and he was at least 6'5", you know.
Okay.
And if I'm looking and I'm going, okay, you know, if I can keep things calm here, I can get them out of here and we'll be fine. And so the judge makes a ruling, parties are excused, and they step out, they start to walk out. I position myself in front of the big guy and his significant other. I position myself in there, and I'm behind the guy, the brother, who sued his sister. And he goes to the left when he's supposed to go to the right, and I correct his position. And all I know is the next thing I know, this guy, this 6'5", 270, is on my back reaching for the guy, you know? And I'm like, like, I don't believe this. I'm, you know, excuse me, do you see the uniform? Do you see the badge? You know, should I be petitioning for a gun? Because I don't. Yeah, I don't carry any pistol. I'm like, you know, I'm like Sheriff Andy Taylor, you know, on the Griffin show, man. I don't carry a gun, you know. Barney carries the gun, you know. And I mean, this guy is all over me, man, and I'm holding him back, and I'm like, you know, I'm yelling to them like, get him out of here, because I realize this guy's like a raging bull, and the color red he sees is, you know, is on his paramour's brother, you know, and he's just trying to get at him, man. I'm like, come on, you know, really, you know,
yeah.
We pay the judgment.
Exactly.
We pay the judgment. What are you mad for? In fact, you were here as a witness. You know.
Exactly.
But
all right.
But that,
what's also new with you now, Officer Bird? What else do you have going on? Any other projects? But Judge,
Well, right now I'm actually trying to get some projects off the ground in regards to production. Like I said, I love kids, and a while back I had an idea I performed What a Wonderful World with an 85-piece youth orchestra, the LA Junior Philharmonic, but I had this idea before then when I met this young African-American cellist who played the blues and jazz on his cello. And I was like, you know, now we need to put music back into our schools, okay, because our kids are going crazy out here in this world, and music has charms to soothe the savage breast and all of that. And not only that, you know, when you're into the discipline of the arts, it calms your soul, and it makes you a better thinking human being. And so I got the idea for building an orchestra that would play the music that young people love to hear. And so to that end, I'm trying to put together, I don't know whether it's going to be a documentary or it's going to be a show that is fundamentally build the orchestra, you know, because we have enough American Idol/The Voice type of shows,
yeah.
You know,
that's a great idea.
That promote individuality, but we have very few shows that promote, you know, actual teamwork and building something that, you know, where the guy playing the little triangle at the end is as important as the guy or the woman who's playing, you know, first violin or, you know, second trumpet or, you know. So that's what I want to do. You know, I'm concentrating more on that, getting music into the hands of young people and getting them to, you know, and getting that on the internet so that it has a worldwide audience, you know, and kids can fully appreciate the arts, you know, through music, at least starting through music. And you know, I think that that's something that we need to challenge our kids about is reaching in and finding their artistic endeavor, and you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I continue
to do that.
Yeah, great. Where can you find information on you and find out, where can we find more information on your officer program? Where's the best place we can go?
Let's see. You can go to, hold on a second, I'm sorry. you can go to Twitter. I think it's Bird the Bailiff at Twitter. You know, and somebody advised me to do that. You know, I wanted a cooler name like everybody else had, but they said, no, if you say Bird the Bailiff, then they'll go there, you know. You know, they can look me up on Facebook, you know, Petri Hawkins Bird. That's it, you know. the good part is that everybody knows more about the social media, you know, than I do. All they have to do is search and it's me.
Also, the good news is we learned about some of the story of how you met Judge Judy. What an awesome story. And how you're not really a corrections officer anymore. Maybe a lot of people probably don't know that. So what a great story. You're tremendous. Good luck on continuing. You're probably getting more TV time than anyone in the world because it's every day. That's the difference. You know, you might have a syndicated show that's weekly. Your show's on every day, so everyone is watching you. And let's see how long you can continue this show for. We'll see. And
well, I hope everybody continues to enjoy it, man. It's, you know, it's still a blast to go to work and know that when I'm standing up there and I got that poker face on and I'm standing there looking stern and everything, I'm probably thinking about something crazy, or I'm laughing at what she does just as much as America does, man, and just
exactly.
as much as the world does. I'm as
Absolutely.
Shocked as anybody at the stuff that comes out of her mouth.
Absolutely. Well, good talking to you. Best of luck, Officer Bird, and thanks for calling the show.
Okay, Neil.
I'll take care. All right, bye-bye. All right, that was Officer Bird. Take care, guys. From Judge Judy, take care, and we'll be talking very soon again. Take care. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, Tolter.net, for more information. Twitter, Tolter, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Tolter, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm excited, and I want to make sure that we do have our guest on the line. Sophie, do we have our guest on the line?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Sophie. So I'm excited to welcome the program from Disney's newest leading lady, Sophie Reynolds. Sophie, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm sure the holidays are getting me excited for sure, especially the time where, you know, things start to slow down before the end of the year and getting to see friends and family, right?
Yeah, I love the holidays because this is, like, my favorite time of year, so I love doing all the holiday things with my family and kind of getting a little bit of time off. It's great.
All right. So let's kind of like break down specifically your journey in acting and how all this kind of started. Tell me specifically how you started acting. When was your first time you decided to act?
So I've been a dancer since I was 3 years old. So I was dancing, and with like a little bit of a push from my dance teachers and stuff, I kind of thought acting would be a good addition to dance. So I decided I would try an acting class, and I fell in love with acting. And so now I was in Portland, Oregon. That's where I'm originally from. And I ended up moving to L.A., and now I'm here doing what I love every day.
Yeah, okay. So, So basically from that process of deciding, so you never thought acting. So dance was your first love, and then it ended up becoming something that really worked out for you, didn't it?
Yeah, totally. Dance was definitely my first love. I hadn't even considered acting, and then I just decided to try it, and I ended up totally falling in love with it.
All right, well, so let's kind of break down specifically your first opportunity and how that came into play. You went to L.A., right?
Yeah, I went to L.A., so that was kind of my first thing. I had done, like, a little short film and a web series thing in Portland, but nothing really big. So L.A. was kind of like I had moved here, and I wasn't even planning to move. I was just going to kind of stay for a few weeks, and then I ended up booking the show and kind of staying.
That's wild. So very early in your in the beginning of your career, you get this opportunity. So learning, I guess, from the web series, you're like, this is just so unreal for you, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, completely unreal. I mean, I had just started taking acting class. I had just moved to L.A. I kind of couldn't believe that I had already booked the show. But I had put, you know, the one thing I made sure is I was really committed to it, and I went to class 3 times a week, and I was trying to, you know, I was pushing really hard for it because I knew it was what I wanted to do. So it was, I feel really fortunate that the opportunity came up so fast. Because it was something that I really, really wanted, and I love doing it.
Absolutely, and it's just, it's something that you do. So tell us the specifics. You went and auditioned, you got the part, and then how did it go from there? Kind of tell our audience, because when you get that big break and that opportunity, you went, started shooting right after, pretty much you knew you got the part, or it took some time before that happened?
It took a couple of months before we got to shoot, so that was definitely like, that was definitely hard because I was so excited and we didn't get to start right away. But then when we did start, it was the craziest experience. I had no idea what I was going into, but I absolutely loved it. The cast, the crew, everyone has been so amazing, and we really love working together. It's been a great experience.
So tell us about the show. And how it is, because, again, it's an interesting thing when you talk about what the show's name is and stuff like that. Describe how that show works.
Yeah, so Gamer's Guide to Pretty Much Everything is basically about Connor, who's played by Cameron Boyce. He was, like, a professional gamer by himself, and then he has a thumb injury. He ends up going to normal high school instead of being homeschooled, and he meets Wendell Franklin and Ashley, who's played by me. And the four of us together kind of work together, and we make a professional gaming team. So we do tournaments and kind of tour the professional gaming world together. So it's really cool. And every episode, we have a section of the episode that we call our gamer vision, where the world kind of transforms into a video game through Connor's eyes. So it's really cool to see the different ways we incorporate the video games. It's been a lot of fun to shoot, and I love getting to share that with the viewers.
That is cool. Well, let's like break down specifically enough. Were you ever a video game player, Sophie, before getting this part?
I wouldn't call myself a big video gamer, no. I mean, I've definitely played some video games in my day. My older brother's a big gamer. So I've played some, but I'm not good, and I wouldn't consider myself a big gamer. But I'm learning, and I'm having a lot of fun learning. So it's been great.
So let's kind of go to that. What games were you playing before and now after? Because, again, I'll go back, and I'm dating myself, Sophie. I was the days of Atari, Sega, PlayStation, Nintendo, and how I would play sports games. And if I even go back to Apple IIe, I'm really dating myself back. Alibaba and the 40 Thieves was, like, I guess, one of the first, games where you're kind of leading yourself through it and stuff, and Raiders of the Lost Ark and things like that. So I know gaming has changed tremendously even when I was playing in college. So tell us what games you were playing before and then after, because I'm sure you're getting yourself educated for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I've always loved, like, my favorite game still is Just Dance, because it is, like, active and I'm a dancer, so I have a lot of fun with that one. I've always kind of liked Mario Kart. I'm definitely better at it now than I was before. And I've actually been getting better at the sports games recently. Like, that's the games, like, that I've kind of improved on and play a little bit more now than I used to. So it's been a lot of fun, you know, learning about the gaming world, because it's this whole world, and we really try to represent it well.
And that's great you said the dancing game, because of how much you love being a dancer. And who would have thought you'd go right into acting and bam, you have your big opportunity. They must have, and that's fantastic. But thinking about gaming and, like, you were playing that dancing game, sports games. I see, Sophie, when we're talking about gaming, that always these more of the, you know, the combat games are popular and the, I wouldn't say violent video games, but I am glad to hear that still people are playing the sports games because they're so realistic.
Yeah.
And if I got myself hooked again, I mean, I used to play Madden back in the day when it was on, you know, PlayStation for hours on end, and you know, I just love Madden, and I love playing the NBA games and all these different things because I was a sports, I'm an athlete, and I wish kids would spend so much more time playing that because then it gives them the opportunity. Hey, I'm playing my favorite player. I'm emulating that player. Now I'm going to go out and get some exercise and do it, just like you like your dancing game because you could literally act it out and play it out because you love to dance. So I'm glad to hear sports games are a big thing. So what sports games do you love to play?
My favorite's NBA 2K. I like those ones. Because I've always my favorite sport other than dance, I'm not a huge sports person, but my favorite one is basketball to watch and like to play. We play it at lunch just kind of casually a lot of times. So it was fun for me. NBA 2K is fun, and I like to customize my player, and like I have fun with that.
And you know what's funny, and I'm glad you brought that up, Sophie, is that you being from Portland, you don't like the Trailblazers. You pretty much are going to be, you have to at least know what's going on with the Trailblazers, right? Because that's, I mean, Portland
I
and basketball.
I do know a little bit. Yes. Those Trailblazers. We like our Trailblazers for sure.
For sure, and then the guys like them for sure, and then that's because that's your sport, pretty much. I mean, I know that Portland's closer, you know, not that close to Seattle, but you still people are Seahawks fans or they're fans of the college teams. But really,
yeah, there's a lot of Seahawks fans, but Blazers is kind of like basketball, kind of more the sport because they're right there.
You're right there. So you hope at one point to ever get on the court, especially with your fame now, to get to meet some of the players and.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I'm not, like, a huge basketball fan, but it would be fun. I mean, you never know.
It would be good for your social media, just especially if you met one of the top stars from Portland. You really would get over. Or you'd rather go to the Forum now. Come on now. You're L.A., or I guess the Clippers are the team now, not the Lakers. So you may go to a Portland Clippers game. So interesting. So you like that. So the game, kind of about talk about it. So you talked about the storyline a bit. So you're on different teams. What kind of games are highlighted in the show where they're competing and stuff like that and part of the show? What kind of games are you guys playing?
I mean, we play all different kinds of games. We do more like the we've done sports games. We did kind of a Madden-esque episode or something sort of like related to Mario. We did one that was similar to like a combat game. Like we have kind of every episode is really different. We've had zombies. We've had all kinds of different stuff. So it's really cool because we get to incorporate all different kinds of video games. So it's awesome.
And that's just part of the show. There's the drama of school, right? And the life. And it's you're a high school student on the show, correct?
Yes, we are high school students on the show.
Yeah. So basically, part of this. And how do they highlight this? You know, as gaming's getting popular, how the teachers react, especially because you guys are so into gaming on campus and stuff. How do the teachers in the show react to that sometimes that you guys play video games all the time?
Definitely the teachers, we don't always get the best response from on the show because we can, especially for gaming in class, which we shouldn't be doing, so I guess that makes sense. Yeah, the teachers aren't exactly the biggest video game fans, more book fans. So it's kind of a fun, like, banter that we have with the teachers, us the gamers, them the educators. So it's kind of a fun dynamic on the show. We have some great teacher guest stars.
Well, it definitely seems like a really fun dynamic, Sophie, because, again, it's just how, you know, teachers think. And honestly, I used to be the biggest gamer in the world, and now I don't have time to play video games. My video game is Twitter. My video game is Facebook. My video game is how I can get a reaction in all those different places, promoting my business, my radio shows, whatever I do. And I live on those different things, and that's what I used to live on for so long. You know, obviously, I'm a fantasy football player. I don't have time to do any of that stuff anymore. So I understand, and I think that we give a bad connotation to video games if because you really do develop a lot of skill sets necessary to be successful in life. And also the fact is that video games are not just about one person stuck in a room now. There's the interaction. You guys are playing on the show, but you're also interacting when you're gaming. That's one thing a lot of people understand is you're gaming across the country, right? Because you guys can do so much interaction with people from all over that you probably show on the show as well, don't you?
Yeah, right. It's kind of something I really didn't know a lot about before, and it's really cool to see, you know, they go online for the video games, and they're playing with people all over the place, all over the world, and so that's a really cool interaction, I think, that video games give kids. It's a unique experience.
Definitely seems like a unique experience for sure, and it's exciting when you see it happen firsthand, and you're like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Like, I go to tutor kids, and I show up, Sophie, and I see, oh, I'm talking to a bunch of people, and I'm like, what? You're playing a video game. Well, no, I'm interacting with a bunch of groups of people, and I'm like, wow. And that's the other part of how popular gaming is getting. And you know also, Sophie, it's become almost like a profession for some people to be professional gamers. So it's just really developing and stuff like that. Have you seen the response to the show so far with, like, your friends on social media and stuff? How many people really like the idea that you put gaming into a Disney show, that the kids are playing games, and how those people are interacting with you on social media and stuff about of the storyline and stuff for the show?
We've got a really, really great response so far. It's been awesome feedback from the fans. They love that there's a gaming show because so many kids now are gamers. And I've gotten a lot of response from female gamers that are really excited to see a female gamer represented. So it's been really cool to kind of step into that role. And it's been amazing to see how many people are excited about the show. It's great.
And today being the day of Star Wars coming out, are you excited? Are you excited about Star Wars coming out? You know, last night my brother-in-law got to see the premiere, and I was really jealous because I grew up with Star Wars. But thinking about that in general, how excited are you about that as well? Have you gotten a chance to see the movie yet, or are you going to see it soon, the new Star Wars?
I have not seen it yet, but I'm definitely going to see it. I'm really excited to see it. I think Star Wars is a part of most people's lives, so it's super cool that they made another one and kind of have extended it through the ages. I always grew up watching it. My brother was a huge Star Wars fan, so it's really cool. And I also got to do a Disney thing with Star Wars where they do Our Code, which also incorporates video games. They basically teach kids how to build video games and how to code, so that was kind of fun too. Got me in the Star Wars mood. It's a I'm really excited to see it.
And I'm sure also you're excited about that fact you're right about teaching kids how to game and teaching kids because to build video games because it's an education portion of this as well. People have such a love for video games. It's going to lead to kids computer programming and being more and more interested in technology, and we need tons of computer programs and people that are working in the IT field, so, and especially girls. So I'm sure when you get to partner with that too, you're excited as well working with these kids to get girls to like doing this stuff as well, because then we're going to have more and more people getting trained for the 21st century.
Yeah, I think it's super cool because there are so many girl gamers out there, and I think sometimes they don't always realize that there are so many, and it's kind of stereotyped as this, like, boy sport or boy thing to do. And I think that it's more than that, and so it's really cool to be able to show girls that they, like, aren't alone and kind of represent the female presence in video games.
Well, fantastic. Great having this conversation with you. Do you have any other projects coming up soon? Are you auditioning for some other stuff as well? Are you anything else to report what you're promoting right now?
Actually, I just finished filming Mostly Ghostly 3, One Night in Doom House. We filmed it in Canada. And so that will be really fun. I'm excited for that to come out. It's a sequel to the first two Mostly Ghostlies. And we had a lot of fun filming it. It stars Corey Fogelmanis and Blake Michael and myself. And it should be really fun to see.
Oh, well, congratulations. So right off the bat, it's just like a whirlwind. And being connected, is that a Disney film, that show, the movie that you filmed? Was that with Disney, or was that with someone else?